This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4, Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got our buddy Ray Ferraro coming up in just a moment. The top 50 list was revealed today by TSN, the annual event. We all take part in that, and the Quizmaster posted it up on TSN.ca earlier this afternoon. It'll be all over SportsCenter. That's hockey. And Ray was a voter. We'll get into that. Connor McDavid, not shockingly. Well, maybe it is. I mean, a lot of people were pushing for McKinnon to be ranked the top player in the world. But right. McDavid, for the fourth season in a row, listed number one on TSN Hockey's top 50 players going into the season. That's projecting on where they're going to be ranked by the end of the season.
I had think McDavid both of those players are going to destroy the league, Brian. I think McDavid and McKinnon, maybe throw in Matthews. I think that they've just – they're going to be so dominant in a 56-game season. They're just – their training, how good they are. I mean, do you remember – can you turn back the clock to watching McKinnon in the bubble in Edmonton? He was playing video game hockey in the National Hockey League. He was throwing guys around. You couldn't get the puck off of him. The dangling, the setting up plays, the wrist shot. It was dominant. Dominance like I haven't seen in a long time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know how you guys are in voting. I struggle with it because how do you, and I'm on the other side, where's the goalies? Like, how is Connor Hellebuck, 15?
He was 15. Hellebuck like was 15.
Like, you know what? You start to look at it. Okay, how do you weight a defenseman against a forward? How do you weight a goaltender against a goal scorer? Like, it almost should be, like, separate, like, forwards, defense, and goalies. Because, you know, basically it's on your opinion. Well, I value goaltending and defense a little bit more than maybe somebody else. So I had Hellebuck in my top 10.
I originally had him in, and then I moved him around a little bit just simply because I know what I'm getting out of McDavid. I know exactly what I'm getting out of McKinnon. McKinnon's not going to be the 208th best player in the league. I don't think Hellebuck will fall off, but he might. You know, goaltenders just kind of cut. Look at Carey Price. Like, he had a 2-year run that was like the greatest run we've seen in forever. And he's still been very good, but he hasn't been at that level. Bobrovsky won 2 Vezinas in the last, like, 7 years. Right. He was abysmal last year.
Yeah, it's a great point.
It's difficult to project that a goalie's going to be that consistent. That's what I have a problem with.
Yeah, and it's a great point. That's why I just think if you separate it, like, I think if you went forwards, then I would have a lot easier time figuring out forwards, because how do I decipher who's at 44 compared to number 38. You know what I mean?
It's
They're interchangeable. Because
tough.
Now it becomes personal opinion. Have you seen this guy lots? Have you
seen
him? Like, who's your favorite team? Who's not? You know, now, and I get it. That's why many people vote, and it's an average thing. It's a fantastic list. I personally struggle with it. I do, because I make the list up, and then I sleep on it, and then I go, now, how can I leave this guy off the list? And then I start moving things around.
I move pieces around.
Isn't it annoying when you write your list and then you're like, oh, my God, I forgot a good player. And then you got to do the whole –
You forget a top 15 player out of nowhere. You're like,
then
oh, my God,
the whole
God,
list
I forgot
is
to
done.
Put, and then you try wedging him in, and that pushes other people down. And then you start looking at, well, how can that guy be at 18? He should probably be at 12. And it's that internal argument that I have, and I get so pissed off at it because I find it takes way too much time, way too much of my time.
I like it, though. I think it's a good, like, prep for the season for me. Like, it kind of jogs my memory into, okay, hockey mode, let's go. And how I have a more difficult time at the bottom end because I've got an idea of who the top 10. I had the exact same top 10, different ordering a little bit, but the top 10 players on that top on the TSN top 50 list, I had the exact same 10. I think I had Hedman ahead of Matthews. I think I had Hedman at 4 and Matthews at 5. I think I had points like at 7 instead of 10 or whatever. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But I had the exact same 10 players. It was, and then 11 through 30 was about the same, give or take. Like, I had Seth Jones way higher. I love Seth Jones. I think he might win the Norris this year. He was at 35. I had him at like 13. I think he's that good, and I think he's going to have a great year. But that's the little stuff that it doesn't matter. Where, you know, if I have him at 13, you got him at 27, it doesn't matter. My thing is once you get to like 40-plus –
right.
Like, I had Shea Theodore on my list. He didn't make it.
I did. I had him on my list, and, you know, I'm looking at – I apologize, Brian, but, like, I look at Svechnikov. Like, I had a tough time squeezing him in. I had him
in the 30s, I think I had him.
Right.
But, like, exactly, and it doesn't matter. It's everyone perceives it differently. The one thing that I came to a conclusion on when I was putting together the list and even when it came out, and it – what triggered this was I was talking to the grappler, like, before the show, and the grappler's going through the list from his perspective and who this guy's too high, this guy's too low. And he said Hedman was too high. And I said, he's not too high. I had him at 4, I think. But of all the positions, and there's 3 of them, forward, defense, goaltender, I believe there's only one position where it is indisputable who the best player is. Indisputable, in my opinion. I don't know who a close second is to Victor Hedman. If I'm building a team – starting tonight for the rest of this year, there is not a defenseman on earth who I'm taking ahead of Victor
Hedman. I talked
to
a coach last year. We'll get Ray in here. But the coach said to me, MacKinnon and Hedman are the two best players in the league. He goes, you can talk to me about Austin Matthews, any other player, but those two guys are the most powerful, best players in the league. Everybody's got a different opinion, but that's from an NHL.
I can't even really argue. I had them both in the top 4. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is Ray Ferraro. Ray, we're talking about the top 50 list that was unveiled, and you voted on that.
No, actually, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't this year? How'd you get out of that?
Yeah, that was a bit of a bogey by me. Next thing, the list had to be in. There was a date, and then we were at the World Junior, and then before I knew it, I missed the date.
Okay. Well,
I think you guys are all wrong, and you're biased towards your teams and your favorite players.
You hate everyone.
I like it. You're
you
egg avatar on Twitter. I like that comment. We've been hearing about that a lot from different people. But I just said prior to having you on, I don't know if you heard it, but I think the only player at a given position where it's indisputable that he is absolutely the best is Hedman on the point, because I think you could make a reasonable argument, McDavid, MacKinnon, in goal, Vasilevsky, Hellebuck, Price.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anyone close to Victor Hedman in terms of defensemen in the league.
I don't know why or how somebody could come up with a better idea than a 6'5" guy that can get around the ice like that, that can, you know, that can move the puck, that can play everywhere you need him to play. He can play 27 minutes a night, and how you could come up with a better idea. Now, there's guys I enjoy watching more, maybe, but that's not to say that if you said you got to pick your D and you get anybody to start with, I'm going to have a tough time walking by Hedman. And I think people will walk by him because he's not spectacular.
Right. He's just
like, he doesn't make
so
those
unassuming
rushes
great
where
play.
Guys are falling down all over the place. He doesn't do that.
Right.
He's money in the bank for 30 minutes a night if he's healthy. That's what he is. And dominant 30 minutes. Like, not just skating around for a public skate out there. Like, he has that effect, like Lidstrom, like Pronger, like Niedermeyer. That's he's the modern day those players.
Like, well, the guy I think of Noodles, it's, you know, you mentioned him, and I was going to say, outside of the complete nastiness, like, he's Chris Pronger to me.
Yeah, long.
Like, the, you know, I mean, Prongs was just like a savage, right? And so you didn't want to get too near him all the time, but or any of the time. But, I mean, same sort of style. Like you know, Niedermeyer was spectacular when he'd get going with the puck. Prongs was never spectacular. He just made 30 minutes of the right play every night. Or 27 minutes, whatever it was. That's kind of Hedman. Like, they're, you know, they won without Stamkos last year for the most part. They weren't winning without Hedman.
Yeah, you could throw Ray Bourque in there too, Ray.
Ray Bourque.
It's like every single time it was the right play, the right play, the right play. And then 3 passes a game, you're like, ah, there's not too many guys that make that pass. And then it was a great shot on the point. And then you sum it all up, it's a goal and an assist, and that was their night.
Yeah.
You're right. Their consistency also hurts them, right? Because there's no waiver to their game. It's kind of like the same thing. You know how if you're around enough coaches and managers and stuff, they start to nitpick everything about the players. And one guy told me, I don't know that he's got elite hockey sense.
I'm like, come on.
I'm like, what else are you looking for?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like a guy saying, McKinnon doesn't play a 200-foot game. I don't care. Find somebody else to check. I want right. the 190 feet that he does play unbelievably well. I'd prefer to take that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
Like, they're all searching for something that's not there.
I just struggle with that. I don't know if you heard me, Ray. Like, I struggle with these lists because I start to get in my own head about, like, okay, weighting this player against this player, and he's a forward versus a defenseman. And, like, I had a tough time, and I went back, and I actually, I don't know if I inserted, but I didn't have anybody off Dallas on that team.
And then I had Heiskanen
like,
on
well,
mine.
Then I'm like, okay, I got to put Heiskanen in there. Well, where do I put him in? Like, you know, and where does he fit? Well, he's probably in the 40s. Okay, who am I bumping off the list? But, like, you know, it was Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin. Like, there's guys who have been perennially on that list. Nope.
Yeah, and it gets tough. It does get tough.
Noodles, I'm laughing because the moving of a player from 38 to 42 is impossible. Like, there's just – you get there and then you're like – oh, my God, I don't have player X anywhere on this list. Somehow I'd forgotten him in my first go-through.
Yes.
And then you're like, well, where do I put him? And you stick him in, and you're like, you know who always was a problem for me the last few years is somebody like Sean Couturier.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think he's
good.
An awesome player. And I'm like, where do you put him?
Right.
I don't know. Like, every year I have trouble with him, you know.
But then, I guess you can justify it by going, okay, well, this player, like, you're looking forward. Like, is Matthew Barzal on people's lists? You know, is he ready to be a 90-point player instead of potentially a 65 to 80-point player? Like, now you start to wait, well, is this guy getting older? Do I have to pull him off the list? Like, there's so many.
And that's the ultimate projection, which is the nature of the list. And I guess maybe we should just focus it to what we believe we know. I mean, McDavid is the number one player on the list for the fourth straight year. Is Nate McKinnon the only contender, or is someone else? Like, shouldn't Hedman be considered a contender? Is Draisaitl, is Matthews, or is it
all
simply a two-hard? You think all of them are?
I think if you throw those guys in a hat.
Where did Draisaitl end up? Where did Draisaitl end up?
He was third.
He was three.
I'm sure that'll be an outrage in Alberta, right? But you got to have – no, but I mean, like, people – like they are – you can't do this list to anyone's satisfaction, I guess, is my point. I was kind of being facetious, but you can't get it to where everybody looks at the list and says, oh, I can see that.
Right.
Because it's all, you know, it's all so subjective. At the end of the day, you're splitting hairs between the best players in the league.
Right.
Right. Well, there's three Leafs on it, Matthews, Tavares, and Marner. Is there another guy that by the end of the year you could see sneaking into the top 50? Like, I had Morgan Riley, I think, at like 49. Because I think if he plays like he did 2 years ago, he's a top 50 player. And if we're projecting it, I think he'll get back to that level. So I guess my answer would be Riley. But could it be Nylander?
Could it be Anderson? I could see Riley and Nylander if they have good seasons. Like, if Nylander follows it up with another, you know, projected, I don't remember, we talked about it, goals per game, all of that. If he's a 30-plus scorer and, like, in this season, I could see him going in there. I want more consistency out of him, but that, I think, is coming. I agree 100%.
30 goals, he's in that list.
I agree, and it's the same thing with Morgan.
That's a crazy number. That's almost 50 goals, right?
Well, no, but he scores 21 in 56 games and is prorated to 30, like over 30, like he had last season.
I think he can get 28. This year. Like, I think he can be a 40-goal scorer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely, with the company that he's playing with, he's going to get opportunities and looks. But I will say this, is being on the second power play and maybe...
That's going to be a big
deterrent. Where I think you're going to see some guys hemorrhage points based on where they are slotted. That's the only thing that concerns me. If Joe Thornton takes a lot of airtime on that first power play, somebody's losing points.
I can't see that first power play being the same all year. I just can't.
Yeah.
And my only point of reference is, I think I said this the other day, the list of 40-year-old really good players is pretty short. It's going to be hard to be really effective for 56 games. And I think at some point Nylander is – look, he scored last year going to the net. He scored from the perimeter. Like, the things he was supposed to change, he addressed. He did. I don't see why he would take a step back. I just happen to be a Nylander fan, and I think playing 20 seconds on the power play is probably not going to be where he ends up.
Well, when you look at the turnover, at least for opening night, this was a top five power play in the league, I believe, a year ago, or top 10 anyway, and they've been very potent for a number of years. You've got Wayne Simmonds, Joe Thornton, and even Morgan Riley at the end of the year was Tyson Barrie, who was power playing the number one power play. Or I guess quarterbacking the number one power play. Power playing the number one power play. So, like, there's, you know, 60% turnover from the last time we saw them to opening night for what was already a very good power play unit.
That's where you wonder, is this overthinking it? It's like, it's a very good power play. Did you need to tinker that much? Who knows? We'll see tomorrow night.
But that's the one luxury they have, is they could go, well, we can go back to what we had 4 months ago. And there's still chemistry there. There's guys who know routes. What they're looking for is to spread this out a little bit.
They're looking for balance, right? You got Joe Thornton and Wayne Simmonds playing with Matthews and Marner and Riley. You're like, that could work. But it's Thornton, Simmonds with VC and Lettinen. You're like, what's going on here with this second unit?
Right.
You know, like, now, guys, we had Brendan Shanahan on the Ray and Dregs podcast yesterday, and he talked – I don't know if the clips are out yet, but he talked about their desire always for balance. And I think it's pretty clear they chased that this year. Like, they looked for balance. They felt they were too young. They brought in some older guys. They thought perhaps they didn't compete hard enough or consistently long enough. So they brought in guys that do, you know, bigger, more stout guys. Now, they didn't bring in any little guys this year like they did the previous couple of years. They brought in bigger guys. Yeah. So I think the quest for balance leaks over to the power play, and like O said, I guess we'll find out tomorrow if it works or not, or at least we'll get the first page of the story tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and we're going to have a lot of answers relatively quickly. You know, they're going to play a bunch of games right off the hop. And, like, I'm just continuing to go over the schedules and how crazy this year is going to be. We've got Matthew Tkachuk coming up in about an hour, and I wanted to see how often and when they play Ottawa, because he's setting up to play his brother, obviously. And I looked it up. They play, at one point, four times in a row. Then they play Edmonton. Then they play Ottawa again. So five times over the course of six games. And then they have a back-to-back or head-to-head 2 weeks later. So they're going to play – Calgary will play Ottawa seven times in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm like, calling a bunch of those games.
What's the four in
a row? How crazy is that?
Calgary goes to Ottawa four games in a row?
I think Ottawa goes to Calgary, I believe, or vice versa. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, let me look at
it. And they play four times in a row, and then they play Edmonton like two nights later, and then a night later they're at Ottawa. Or whatever it is. They play them five
times. That's where I said the Canadian division is awesome and everything, but four in a row is tough.
Well, and you make a great point, Hayes, and this is where we should maybe, and we won't just because we are a reactionary group, but Winnipeg plays Ottawa like four times in a row really early, mm-hmm. like really early. And, you know, if Ottawa's not there yet and Winnipeg look like – you talk about quality of competition, especially early, like the standings could look a lot different. That's where you got to take a step back, because Calgary may be trying to make some hay near the end of this season where you point out, well, hey, they play Ottawa, you know, six or seven games, and maybe Ottawa's in rebuild mold or selling off players. Like, it might be in a little different scenario.
Yeah, when that schedule pops up for
you.
Yeah, but they also might have their stuff together a little better by the end of the year, right?
They might be a lot tighter. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, the randomness of that. Like, it's funny, we got our schedule yesterday, and I had six forensic scientists going over it to figure out where the hell I was supposed to be, because I couldn't figure the damn thing out. And Cammie was doing her schedule at the same time, and this is just to you guys' point. She said, wow, Toronto's out here seven times this year. I'm like, no, they're not. And I go, they can't be. And it's seven times in Vancouver and five in Toronto.
No, that can't be right. They don't play them 12 times.
And then it's – no, but it's – The games get overlapped on top of each other, like on our schedules. We're looking at this thing, trying to figure it out. Can't even figure out where the game. And you're like, because I'm looking at my schedule, and she's like, that's not even a game.
Yeah, I.
Did you do that, Noodles?
At 8:30 this morning, Mike Johnson FaceTimed me because I thought I only had like eight games. I was looking at one side of the schedule. I'm like, boy, I guess I'm not calling many games. And like, I said to Johnny, I'm like, FaceTime me to show me what the hell's going on. Because it's like a, you're right, you need a scientist. It's a spreadsheet. And he's like, no, you got to look at that column and this column. And anyways, it works out that I have more than whatever I said. I've got more, lots of games.
But where I was going with that is like the every layer of hockey this year is going to be so reliant on figuring out a schedule that nobody has any reference to. Yeah. Like you're talking about, is it good to play Ottawa early or late? Is it good to play games on the road early or home? Does it even matter anymore? I don't know. Like, I don't think so. With no fans in there, I don't. I just think it's a different sheet of rink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, Brian, I'm just looking at my schedule here, like in late February, Flames at Senators, Flames at Senators, Flames at Senators, three games in four nights, and then Senators at Canadians, and then it's Senators at Flames for two right back. So the Flames play them five of six games right there. Like, that's crazy.
It's crazy. You know? And that even speaks more to the idea that home ice is meaningless. If you're there for 5 days and you play them three times, like, it's not like you're flying in the night before, but game two or game three, you've been in town for 3 or 4 days and there's no fans. Like, it makes no difference. Right? Like, you're preparing for a game and you've been in Calgary for 3 days. You've already played them once. We're going again tonight. There's going to be no home ice advantage. None. Outside
and,
of, you know, last change and stuff like that.
Hey, well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this slowly works itself out, like to what it really becomes. Because we can all speculate at it, right? And it's like, damn, this is a lot different. I think that's going to happen.
I had one more thought. I don't know where you guys would weigh in on this, but because Toronto and Edmonton were hub cities, like, those players got used to playing in those particular buildings. So, like, you know, a lot of times your building, you feel a little bit different. Well, for example, Montreal played a bunch of games in Toronto recently, like, and they lived there and, you know, were in and out practicing there a ton. There's that familiarity. Edmonton might be up against it too, where there were so many teams that played out of that building. You're not going to get that home ice bump, you know, to your point, Brian, where it's just going to feel like, hey, this is just a hockey game, and whether it's home or on the road. But there's another layer with Edmonton and Toronto because those teams shared their buildings with everyone. And those teams played multiple
games. Do you think there is home ice anymore? Like, let's go on a regular season. What's compared to when you played in the old buildings with the different sizes and the, you know, like, I don't, and intimidation was probably more of the game. I think it's probably easier to play on the road now than it's ever been.
Oh, watch out, though. Ottawa's going to have fans, according to the
Brain. Oh, he's backed off that now, I think. Didn't he say
they released a statement.
Well, when you make the announcement while Doug Ford is, like, literally saying, don't leave your house, it's you know, it's a little bit tough to get that sales pitch all the way through. Not sure that was necessarily being received properly in the greater Ottawa area. But, you know, at some point it's going to happen. He's not alone. I mean, Eugene Melnyk's the only one willing to go on the record, but I think you'd be naive to suggest that there isn't some jealousy throughout the league that fans are going to be in Arizona and Florida and I think Nashville. Like, that's some revenue. Those owners are going to be making some money. And the other owners can't make it right now. So,
agreed.
I wouldn't be surprised if you caught them in a candid moment where they'd say, you go take the bullets for us, Eugene, and then we'll see where, you know, the chips fall in 2 or 3 months.
Hayes, I think you should write this down for like April 3rd, and we can and maybe we can have this discussion like a legit one. Mm-hmm. Like, it, you know, there's going to be more and more pressure as the year goes on for something to be loosened to get 2,000 fans, 4,000, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you could think that I can see a scenario where that happens in a lot of places in the States, of course, before it happens here. But how would they not quietly be pushing? Not now, but in a couple of months.
Oh, it's going to happen. And what I think might spark it is this plan, I believe, that the NFL has to get frontline workers to the Super Bowl, those that have been vaccinated. You know, and I could see that being something that gets thrown out there. And I don't know if the owners are, you know, I think the owners would do it as a one-off, like, hey, come on in, free game. If you've been vaccinated, you've been on the front lines. And then it's like, is it a second game, third, fourth, fifth? At what point is it like, eh, you got to buy some tickets here? Because,
yeah, right.
You know, I think that's going to happen. Like, I'm kind of a little bit nervous about that split within society 3 or 4 months down the road where it's like, hey, I've been vaccinated, I'm all good. Let's go do this or let's go do that. And then the rest of society is like, well, I don't know if we should do that. I haven't been down that road yet. And how everyone handles it. So,
well, the best thing is we know that there'll be level-headed discussion about it.
Always is. It's never emotional, ever. We'll let Twitter make the decision. That's what we should do.
Yeah.
If you really want to get crazy, start up a Twitter poll and see where that takes you.
Jerry
King. O's the king of the Twitter polls.
He is. He loves a good Twitter poll. All right, buddy. Well, we'll leave it there. And tomorrow night, it's go time. So we're looking forward to that. And game night.
Crazy.
We got a bunch of games. We'll have some props tomorrow. We'll really tee up the season. It's going to be fun.
I'll look forward to it. It'll be, I think we all know it's going to be like unlike anything we've seen. So I think there'll be, it's going to be a wild ride to try and evaluate this stuff as it goes along. It'll be fun, I think.
It's going to be really fun.
I hope it goes well.
Yep, I'm with you on that. All right, buddy, we'll do it tomorrow at 5.
Hey, be well, guys. See ya.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom remains open by appointment only, or you can shop and buy online at MapleToyota.com to receive rates from 0%. I believe, what are you doing tonight? Is it the fantasy show tonight? The season preview show tonight? It's all happening tonight on TSN.
Preview. Yeah, it's a busy night, buddy. It's a busy night.
Yep, I had to do some stuff too. I should have kept my suit on.
See, I would have known that, again, if I was in the building. Like, you show up in the building day of, big production, people running around like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to get things done, things cut
Quiz
properly.
Quizmaster during a segment, wheels right in, that type of stuff.
Yeah, but I am out of sight, out of mind. I have lost all control in terms of the schedule.
I could see the Quizmaster with, like, a full shield on, like, right in your grill,
Archer Zerbe helmet. Archer Zerbe helmet.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to have the Archie Zerbe helmet, your first panel, when you're back.
No, he just goes with the standard mask, and he goes about his work.
Yeah,
no, I'm telling you, this will be another level.
Matthew Tkachuk in about 35 minutes. John Hollinger from The Athletic on the Raptors lost last night. And what is going on with Kyrie Irving? We will try to get you as updated as possible. This story is starting to spiral. And it's starting to get ugly. I mean, it's starting to get ugly in terms of how they're going to handle this guy in Brooklyn because, you know, he's been away for personal reasons. Tonight he won't play. That is the fourth game he has missed due to personal reasons, whatever that means. And during those personal reasons, he's caught on video partying with people. No mask on in a club somewhere in Jersey. So is it personal reasons or is it I just don't want to play and I'm going to go party for a week? And
I just go to Peter King's comments, and he's a football guy, but he just commented on Kyrie. He said, this guy is so talented, but I also feel that he is so close to pissing it all away and not being an NBA basketball player anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like he's on that track. It's just got that feel to it, man.
It's a weird, weird feel. So the GM of the Nets has issued a statement. We'll get you updated on how the NBA is handling that. And new protocols in the NBA. Is it actually going to do anything? We'll see. We'll get into that more. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right. The spreads are out for the divisional round this upcoming weekend. Two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. And I'm sure Al's brother is in his bunker up in Agent Court, putting in his hours, putting in his work, coming up with details and different angles on who he likes and who he doesn't. So we'll get back into that pool a little bit later in the week. But
anything catching your eye?
Well, the biggest spread of the weekend, not surprisingly, because it's Kansas City, but they're a 9-point favorite, I believe, over Cleveland.
I like that.
That's a big number.
All day.
You like Kansas City in
that game? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
By the way, Chase Claypool, we touched on it a little bit. Just stop doing that. You're a Canadian guy. Just say, like, what's the sense of losing an NFL playoff game saying, well, yeah, they beat us, but they're going to get their ass kicked next. You lost your right to say it.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
It's like you just lost it. You could chirp somebody if you want to chirp somebody, I guess, but, oh, they're going to get killed next. You can't say it. You lost your right, man.
Well, he's said some goofy stuff throughout the year. Like, we support Chase Claypool based on him being a Canadian, and he's been on the show, friend of the show. But, you know, early on when they were rolling, it was, you know, losing, never heard of her, on our way to 16-0, and all of a sudden it just imploded.
Yeah.
And Claypool had a great start to the year, and he even faded. Now, a lot of that, I think, was Roethlisberger. His arm basically fell off. So it didn't matter what kind of routes he was running. It didn't matter if he was open or not. Roethlisberger wasn't going to get him the ball. But, yeah, that's kind of the code of sports. If you get smoked, and Pittsburgh got smoked,
yes,
you can't talk smack about that team. They own you. You know, yeah. There's a statute of limitations. Next time you play them or you get into the offseason, go ahead. You can't turn around 24 hours later and be like, yeah, we got embarrassed, we got spanked, we were brutal, but
someone
else will beat them.
It can do the old James Harrison thing. Take a pick at 4 in the morning when you're in the gym the next day. That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. You can't take a shot at the Browns. I mean, the Browns, they credit to Cleveland. I think, obviously, they're in tough, but they got that run game. They got that offensive line. It's a big spread. It says something about Andy Reid's teams when they're coming off a bye. His numbers are, like, outrageous.
Yeah.
The offensive production, the winning percentage, crazy. Off the
charts.
And
it seemed like Claypool was kind of buying into the – there's talented receivers in Pitt, and they're loudmouths, and they're social media guys, and they like to say a lot of stuff, and he could tell he's just – as the year's gone on, he's just kind of morphed into one of the fellas, and he's a part of that receiver group, mm-hmm. and they got a lot of talent, and they got a lot of mojo, too. So a lot of swagger there. You could just see how it developed throughout the year. Say nothing, I'm happy to be here. Say nothing, happy to be here. Then it was like – then it just started evolving into something different.
Well, right. It's a perfect segue into this Kyrie Irving story. So Kyrie Irving, there was a video – I think it was Instagram. Someone posted up on Instagram. They're at a bar or a club or something, and I think it was his sister's birthday. And Kyrie Irving is there, no mask on. No one in the place has a mask on. There's a bunch of people. They're partying. They're having a good time. Sure enough, someone had to post it on Instagram. You know, like, of course, you had to do that. But that's, A, not allowed right now, especially with the way the NBA is rolling. Trying to keep track of the amount of games being postponed in the NBA is a near impossibility. Like, every night there's another team that can't field 8 players. They can't get 8 players on the court to play a game. And they're reeling right now to the point where they issued a statement today in new protocols, and they're really trying to clamp down on it. I think the new protocols, largely just window dressing, not really going to be effective, not really going to change anything. But the NBA and Adam Silver feel like they have to do something. You know, they have to send a message that we're clamping down and we're trying to change and we're trying to get this back on the rails. So then you got Kyrie Irving doing this, where he's partying, he's pulling a James Harden. But what makes it crazier and uniquely Kyrie Irving, based on what this guy has been all about over the past year, year and a half, is he's away from the team for personal reasons.
Right.
And, like, no one knows how to define personal reasons, especially in this era. We don't know what that means, what's going on in your life, how you're feeling, what you're dealing with. But it's very difficult when he comes back to explain what personal reasons, quote-unquote.
That's exactly right, because what you're showing your teammates in the organization is, my personal reason is I just don't feel like playing right now. I'm good enough to go to a birthday party. I'm good enough to go to the club where the birthday party is hosted. I'm just not feeling good enough to play professional basketball, my job and what I'm paid to do, and that's the message he's sending. If I'm his teammate or coach, how does Nash think of this as first year coaching in the NBA and he's got to put up with this garbage? That's nonsense.
I agree. And it bothers me where all the defenders are like, well, look, he gave money to this and he gave money. Doesn't matter. It doesn't give you a free pass to be an idiot on your teammates and actually on the job that pays you all that money to give away. Like, it bothers me because I see a bunch of Kyrie defenders going, well, you know, like, he's given money to this and he's done this. Great. That's a fantastic trait, and I hope that a lot of people do that. But it doesn't give you a free pass to be a jackass. And to me, he's acting like a jackass.
Well, and here's – society has evolved, has changed. The way people react to, you know, personal reasons, incredibly different than right. the way we reacted 3 or 4 years ago. But what probably hasn't changed as much is the way the locker room reacts to it, right? Like the media, the fan base, Twitter, Instagram – the general public may look at it and say, well, you know, this is happening or that's happening or he might be going through this or, hey, we're dealing with a pandemic. That's fine, and maybe there's truth in that. But if the locker room doesn't want to hear that or doesn't believe it, then he's in real trouble. Like, he's in real trouble. Like, because if you're on the Nets and they're grinding, this is not a team that started 8-0, 9-0. They're picking up losses here, man. Kevin Durant was out due to COVID precautions.
Right.
And Kyrie Irving just decides, I'm out of here. And whatever the reasoning may have been at the time, it just doesn't jive with, I really needed time off, when you're at a party. When you're throwing a party, you're at a party, and the video shows you dancing with your sister and friends.
Dude,
it
that's
just doesn't
the King Daddy Topper, Hayes. That is the King Daddy Topper right there. With Durant being out and you were needed so badly by your team, and let's not jump to conclusions because we actually don't know what the personal reasons are. But when you show up at the party at the club or whatever, it's like I said, the only thing you basically can't do right now is play basketball.
But I think the minute that you show up at the party in the club, you can't use, you know, any other excuse other than you're just being selfish and you
right.
don't care about your team.
It gets thrown out the court.
It really does. That's what it does for me. You're right. It throws it out because if he's behind closed doors and he's struggling and – Hayes, you pointed it out. There's so many things now that people are sensitive to and should be sensitive to, but that's not one of them. You're not, you know,
partying and doing not, your, exactly. That's just that, not.
That's
not
a selfish move, and there will be at some point somebody that says something to him. Problem is, if it's a bench player on that team, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, and that's where it gets dicey because he still is Kyrie Irving, who is, if not the highest paid player on the team, the second highest paid player on the team. He's the second most powerful player on the team behind Kevin Durant. And he's a guy that is absolutely needed for them to go anywhere, for them to get to the promised land. So I
right.
think he's also, he's probably well aware of that, right? Like Kyrie Irving is well aware of that. The reaction to this would be very different if it was the eighth man on the bench who left and then was spotted at a party. I don't think the team would have much time for it. They'd
no.
say, wait a minute, you just kind of left. You just said personal reasons. The team issued a statement. They're like, we still don't know when he's coming back. We don't know what's going on. We're just going to keep plugging along, and he'll explain himself, I guess, when he returns. Like, it was a statement that was sanitized. You know, it was they took the edge off, but it still kind of read to me like, I can't believe we're dealing with this right now. Like, I can't. This guy just is gone, and at the same time partying and – you know, he's been involved in a lot off the court.
No kidding.
Over the
and
past
it gets
year.
To it's getting to the
Kyrie
point
Irving.
Now where the same thing that if you talk to different executives around the league and they were explained the issues with James Harden and the conduct of behavior, you would have people honestly shaking their heads, saying, "What? You actually let that occur in this organization?" And now Brooklyn is put in the same position. It's like, how much do we have to put up with here? Because the flip side of it is that once he puts his shoes on and his jersey, he's one of the best players in the world. One of the best ball handlers to ever play the game. He could score the ball. It's like, how do we pass that up, this guy going on the court and player for our team? But it's sooner or later it gets to the point where you just can't deal with any of it, no matter how good you are.
Well that's got to be the next question, right? Like, okay, he's gone this far. I think if he were to return to the team tomorrow, they'd probably accept it. They might fine him. They might suspend him. They might say you're not starting. They'd penalize him, I would think, in some fashion. You know, unless
he's
got. Don't
you think if the nonsense continues, though, Hayes, they say, okay, that's enough.
That's what I'm. I think it's got to stop if you're Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be like, listen, you can't leave the team anymore. We can't have it. It's too big of a distraction. It's too tough. You're too important. But if you're just going to go and we can't rely on you playing, And not only that, if you're not here and not playing, we don't know what you're up to. It's a complete lack of responsibility, and it's a complete lack of following through on the contract.
Yeah,
and the unwritten rules of being a team player in a team sport.
But at some point you suspend him or whatever, but like there is a violation of the contract. I'm sure there's rules in that, in the CBA rules, language in the contract that you know, you have to be a pro, you have to do this, you have to do that. But, you know, ultimately it just seems like this guy doesn't care. He legitimately does not care about his teammates and his team, because if he did, he'd find a way to get back. Like I can't fathom it, but I'm certainly was never as talented as him, but that doesn't give him the right. Like it just, I would have a big problem if I had
a teammate. This gets back to, you know, by all accounts, Kyrie Irving was at the forefront of pushing not to go down to the bubble, which, again, I don't know exactly his reasoning behind that. There was a lot going on in the world. I don't think he was alone. But what continued to come up was Kyrie Irving isn't even going to the bubble. Like, he wasn't going to play. He had shoulder surgery. He was never even going to be there. But yet right. He was pushing for other guys to say no. And then he shows up to camp this year, and he's like, I'm not talking to the media. They're sheep.
Oh,
I'm not doing
God.
It. And it's like, okay, I guess. And now this, it's like just one after the other, you're like, nothing illegal, nothing harmful, you know, in terms of society or anything like that. But
there
in the nature of a team sport.
Yeah, there's some narcissistic behavior where it's like, I just have to put the focus on me right now, and that's it. That's what he's doing. He's
yeah.
just.
And there's Steve Nash, rookie head coach, and
saying,
who the hell knows
hell
how he's
going
to handle this. Yeah, because Kyrie Irving made it clear during the offseason he doesn't even look at Steve Nash as the coach. He's just kind of like one of the guys. Like, and, you know, that's
– Steve Nash is one of the greatest players who ever played, was he not? I mean,
Absolutely.
Two-time MVP.
Doesn't seem to matter right now.
I know, but like that, I guarantee you he would have a problem with this guy, like big time. Because Nash wasn't that type of person whatsoever.
It's got to go up the chain, though. Steve Nash isn't going to make that call. It's going to be the GM, the owner. Like, this is a code red. We all have to come together and figure out what we're going to do here type of moment. So we'll see. Matthew Tkachuk in 20 minutes. John Hollinger from The Athletic will get his take on the Kyrie Irving stuff. What happened with the Raptors last night? How are we in a position where the Toronto Raptors are 2-8, finding new ways to lose every single night? It happened again last night. So we'll catch up with John in about 45 minutes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Matthew Tkachuk in about 15 minutes. The Masters, Augusta National, announcing they're going to have patrons at the Masters in a few months. We're about 3 months away from circling back. That's going to be so goofy that Dustin Johnson is going to be out there with a green jacket on 5 months after winning the tournament.
I love it, though. Don't you want to double up on Masters?
Absolutely.
Fire one up every November, too.
Yeah, I'm with you. They should do it twice a year. They should have 8 major tournaments.
Yeah.
There's one thing I've learned
all they
over
do,
the past
Hayes,
10 months.
Make the November one, you get a purple jacket.
Yeah, mix
purple.
It up.
Yeah.
Make it something like fall colors.
Yeah.
Right? Like a maroon jacket or something like that.
Yeah. Now you're onto something. We all love the golf tournament. I love the quick turnaround. November, back in April, it'll be around the corner. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be great, man. I can't wait for that. We got to get through a couple of months. You know,
dude, you
poor weather up here. And
you talked about patrons at the Augusta. Did you see the carrying on in Alabama for the championship? It was, the streets were flooded with people. It's like, oh my goodness.
I'm not surprised by that. It's all a bunch of young people, you know.
Yeah.
Like I can get on my high horse.
Well,
as
dude,
a
there's
37
the wrong thinking
right
there
right in the middle of it.
The wrong thinking right there. It should be like, oh, they're young people, so just go do it. That's the biggest problem right there.
No,
and
I'm not saying they should. What I'm like, let's be honest. If you were 20 years old and you lived in Tuscaloosa and you have not been living a normal lifestyle, you really think you'd be sitting in your house scolding people?
Dude,
be honest.
You think? I'll be honest with you. I would have pulled my group of friends aside and said, "We got to do a Zoom. We'll watch the game and have drinks individually."
Not a chance in hell you would ever do that. You would be right in the middle of it, no tarp on. You'd be up a telephone pole.
Who are the guys? That
I would just be Frank the Tank. Huh?
That's right.
Well, we all would have been, but that's right. Who are the guys that you took the Hootie and the Blowfish, and the guy like took Hootie's last dart or the bass's last dart? That goon squad, they would all be. It would be the same thing. And you guys, 21 years old, and it isn't make an excuse for those guys. They have to be mindful.
No,
they have to be respectful.
It's
just looking back and going, yeah, I could see myself doing
that's
that,
all I'm saying. I'm not saying it should happen. I'm not saying I want to happen. I obviously would never do it today, but I can't sit here and tell you if I was 19 years old, I wouldn't be right in the middle of it saying, let's go party, let's go streaking, we're taking this down to the Y, and we're hitting KFC, and we're doing the whole nine. I would be Frank the Tank. And I think anyone that's suggesting they wouldn't be, we lose sight of our youth pretty quickly. You know, and it's, again, the three of us are just sitting in our homes. We wouldn't do it. And even if there wasn't a pandemic, I wouldn't be in the middle of that. Like, I'm not going down there. No way. I'm just going to hang out with my buddies and watch the game or whatever. But that's what happened. It's 10,000 college kids that are like, hey, we're going to party.
And that's unacceptable.
That's a concern. Well, and it's follow the leader, right? A couple people go, and all of a sudden it's like, everyone's down there. I guess we're going. And also, that scene just feels so weird right now. It looks so unique because we just don't see it anywhere else in the world.
We'll get into it in the 6 o'clock hour, but you two are antisocial, even when there wasn't, when there wasn't a pandemic.
Exactly.
So it doesn't matter if we're stuck in our houses or not. Like, you wouldn't be in the middle of that mix.
No, that's guy after the Raptors, beat Milwaukee. I'm complaining about traffic, trying to get out of downtown.
Exactly.
Like, that's a totally different scenario now. But 20 years ago, when the Leafs won a playoff round in 2004, I was running up and down Yonge Street like a lunatic.
Yeah. If I don't know the people, I don't like being in crowds. It's as simple as that. I get overwhelmed.
It gets overwhelmed.
I do. Matthew I don't Kachuk. Like being in crowds.
Okay. Matthew Kachuk in 10 minutes. John Hollinger coming up in the next hour as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.